Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 76. I'm Karen, and I'm joined by Kristen.
Sup?
When did you get here? Has it been like half an hour? I feel like we just talked. We saw each other last week, didn't we?
Right.
We just had a lot of things to get off our chests.
It's amazing how much life stuff just happens that quickly.
It's like, you're not living together, so you can't just pop out into the living room and tell each other.
And you're like, this is worthy of a conversation, not just like, hey, by the way, this is a text about what's happening in my life. Like, should probably give an update.
I know, but life seems so chaotic right now. In a good way, though.
Yeah.
I feel like, especially with the podcast, we have some cool stuff coming up that we'll talk about later. And
that's why this episode's a little late. So, hi. Thanks.
Yes.
Sorry for sticking with us. Scheduling, it's just kind of a mess sometimes. Yeah. Especially when I work weekends.
This episode is not getting up today. On Monday, there's no chance. I've had the most chaotic day I've had in a very long time. So
it might be a little late, but it's not for lack of trying.
Yeah. Hopefully
just
it'll
chaos.
Be worth it. We are talking about Lance Reddick today and his movies, his career, his role as Zeus in Percy Jackson. Like we said last week, it just kind of felt right to sit down and talk about him a little bit and pay homage to everything he's done because he's had a pretty cool career and some really interesting roles. So I'm excited to dive into that.
Yeah.
If you have any thoughts or feelings about Lance, about Percy Jackson, about Kane Chronicles, about Magnus Chase, about
Prophecy Radio,
anything really, you can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We have a little less feedback than we have the last couple of weeks, which is good because I feel like it was like everybody decided to write in at once, and I was like, this is awesome.
We had like,
oh my gosh,
3 emails, 10 tweets, and it was like, love hearing from
you.
I'm
not complaining.
We will never complain about
you
that.
You can keep writing it.
By the way, I wanted to mention, I checked our iTunes reviews the other day.
I haven't checked those in a while.
Just kind of randomly. I was like, you know, I should probably look at those. And I wanted to say thank you for all of those that you guys do post. We do see them. It's probably the one outlet that we forget to check.
Yeah.
But we do kind of look, remember, and go back and check. And I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who has posted there. And if you posted questions like a year ago, I'm so sorry.
Did they really?
There was one or two people who had asked a question, and I think we've since answered it, so I don't think it was like,
okay.
But I don't think we answered them. We just answered the question throughout our normal.
We might have to go back and go through some of those reviews at some point and just
I just skimmed, but I wanted you guys to know we did see them and we really appreciate you, and thank you so much.
Definitely, because that's a huge help for us. We should really add that to the list of things to check. It's because we don't get notifications from it.
Right.
So
it makes it hard to remember.
Exactly. There are a couple of pieces of news this week, and we're going to save some for next week, too. I'll give you a little update on that soon. But I wanted to mention the Reed Riordan article, Women's History Month Spotlight on Gaia, which is quite an interesting character to put a spotlight on. I mean, she's a very powerful woman, one of the more primordial deities in existence. So it's a pretty cool article. They mention Nepo babies, which I thought was really funny because that's like a big thing right now.
Right.
Got to stay on top of the trends. But yeah, we don't really know much about Gaia right now in the podcast canon because we have not read Heroes of Olympus yet and it's been a little while.
Yes.
But we will get to her eventually.
It might be a minute.
From now.
It might be a minute.
I've been trying my best to retweet everything that I see on Twitter. So hopefully you guys are following over there and know that the New York City tickets are now available for the Sun and the Star tour stop there, which is really cool. I think all of the stops are still open, but they are selling out fast and they will sell out before
the event
actually comes up. Like they very, very usually do sell out. So if you haven't gotten them yet, if you're still thinking about it, just do it. This is the universe telling you to just do it. It's going to be a great time. I know Mark keeps teasing how amazing the slideshow is going to be. And Rick's slideshows by themselves are usually fantastic. And I cannot imagine the two of them together. It's going to be great. I'm so excited.
I love that they're very excited about their slideshow. Like, that gives me great joy.
Yeah. And if you can't catch one of the Sun and the Star tour stops, Mark Ashiro is also going on tour for Into the Light, which is his YA, like, thriller novel that will be coming out tomorrow, March 28th. We're recording this on Monday. I have finished reading it. It is very intense. Please, please, please read the trigger warnings. It is very intense. I cannot underline that enough. It is intense. Okay. But it's a really great story, I think a really important story, and I did get to talk to Mark about...
all kinds of things.
Yeah, all kinds of things. I did talk to them about Into the Light, mostly, but I snuck a couple questions in there for you guys, and I'll give you more on that later. But if you cannot see them for The Sun and the Star, try the Into the Light.
Yeah.
Tour stop. Should be pretty cool.
It will be Rick Riordan-less, but you can still talk to Mark, or you can still see what Mark's got going on.
And Mark's awesome. Mark is one of us. Mark is an old school fandom person.
Yes.
So I feel like it's just really great whenever you can talk to somebody like that who just gets it.
Right.
Yeah. Becky had a couple of tweets this week as well. She highlighted a author spotlight with Roseanne A. Brown with Cinelinks, and said that you need to listen to this author spotlight with Rick Riordan Presents author Roseanne A. Brown. Steve uses some salty language, so parents, just warning you. But even so, I absolutely loved this interview. I did not get a chance to listen to this because, like I said, life has been chaotic. But we love Roseanne, and I'm sure it's fantastic. So I'll provide a link for it, and hopefully get to listen to it sometime soon.
Fun fact for Karen, this is the same company that makes that game that we've played with the cards where you connect, like, actors and directors, and it's the Cinelinks game.
Really?
I was like, wait, that's the name of the game. So I went and looked at the tweet, and yes, it is the company that makes the Cinelinks game.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so just a fun fact for Karen. Gosh. By the way, if you're a movieophile at all, Cinelinks, the game, like, it's like a board game with cards. It's actually quite a bit of fun, so... just throwing that out there in case you're looking for gift ideas or want a new game or whatever.
Can never have too many board games,
right,
in my opinion.
I second that.
We're going to wrap up the news section with that because the only things we have left, I don't think we have enough room to talk about them in this episode, so we're going to save them for next week. We've got Rick's blog that came out today on Monday. It's a little spring update. You can go read it, but we'll chat about some of the things he mentions next week. There's also a Reed Riordan quiz that we're going to save for next week as well because those usually take a little while, so we'll just add them into the mix. And then Becky also teased something with Angie Thomas, and I think it ended up, I was really hoping for a Rick Riordan Presents book, to be honest.
I mean, a girl can dream.
I think a lot of people were, but I think it's just going to be them basically in conversation with each other. And Angie and Rick are just like, they seem like great friends. Like, they really respect each other's careers, and they're always lovely on Twitter to each other. So this is like really going to be a highlight, and I'm so excited to tune into this.
Yeah.
But I'll give you more details about that next week, or you can go check out Rick's Twitter if you're impatient and want to know now, which is totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to gatekeep it from you.
Definitely not.
Okay, let's get into our discussion for this week. We're going to be talking about Lance Reddick. Like I said, he is playing Zeus on Percy Jackson and the Olympians, and he's had a pretty big career, done some really iconic roles, and I'm super excited because I definitely like, first of all, he's got that face. Like, you just recognize him. He's got a very recognizable face, and even though I'm not, like, super, super familiar with a lot of his roles, I just, like, knew who he was. So when he was cast, it was really exciting. Like I said, I think we cast him in one of our fan casts. And
I think you casted him as Charon, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I did, yeah.
Because then we found out that he actually played Charon in John Wick, and we thought that was really funny.
I still think that he would have made a fantastic Charon because
that
head shape would have been perfect.
Stop that face, the gauntness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, It would have been great.
But I did a little bit of a deep dive on him. Not too much. I just wanted to share some of his background with you guys to see if there was anything there that really stuck out to you that you were interested in looking into further. He was born in Maryland, which I think we mentioned last week because of the donation that Becky had brought up. And he studied music since he was a teenager, and he attended the University of Rochester's Eastman School of Music and earned a bachelor's degree, which is pretty cool. And, you know, we had talked about Rick saying how musical his performance was at Zeus, so this really stuck out to me that since a teenager, that was, like, his main goal. And Rochester is not too far from where I grew up, so I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Then he moved to Boston and attended the Yale School of Drama. I feel like that's got to be, that's pretty prestigious, you
like
know?
That Natalie Portman life. Every time I think of the Yale School of Drama, I think of Natalie
Portman.
Really?
That's so funny.
And she made, did she go to Yale? I don't know. But I know she went to like an Ivy League school and got a drama degree. Yeah. Yale is usually the one that people talk about.
I think, didn't Winston Duke and Lupita Nyong'o also go to Yale? Because I thought that was so interesting.
I think so.
And I have a crush on Winston Duke, so.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
The other one that usually I think sticks out is like Columbia/NYU. Those are both big film schools too. Yeah. But I think Ivy League-wise, Yale is usually the one people talk about. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and he received his Master's of Fine Arts in 1994. And his breakout role was as Cedric Daniels in The Wire, which I've never seen.
I have not either.
I've heard fantastic things about him, and specifically him on there. Mm-hmm. My boyfriend is a huge fan of The Wire, and he was like, he knew we were doing this episode, and he was like, you can binge that whole series in like 3 days if you just don't sleep. And I was like, where do you think I have time to put down everything and also not sleep just to watch this show?
Yeah, I've heard amazing things about The Wire. It's not one that I've been able to binge myself yet, but it's kind of on that ever-present list. And I'm like, sometime I really would like to try and watch it. I've heard that it sometimes can be hard to, like, get into now because it is a little bit dated. It's probably about 8 to 10 years old at this point.
More than that.
Okay.
I would imagine.
I was going to say, it's at least 8 to 10 years old, but it might be more like 20.
It's very hard to tell, like,
it's still 2010 in my head.
Yeah. So it ran from 2002 to 2008. So that is 20 years since it started.
15.
2002.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To 2023.
Yeah. About 15 or so since it ended.
Yeah.
It's time.
I know.
But yeah, I would at some point like to watch The Wire. And honestly, Lance will be a huge part of kind of the pull to do that because I would like to see him in something really meaty. I feel like he had a lot of very specific kinds of roles
throughout
his career.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But like, I know in The Wire, he really has like some meaty stuff. He's a main character. He's there for, you know, most of the run or all of the run. I don't know because I don't, again, haven't seen the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to watch it at some point.
Also, Idris Elba is in that show as well, and that is definitely a pull for me.
I mean, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, I feel like you're right. That one's also on my ever-present list. I want to watch it someday. Who knows when that day will be, but we'll get there eventually. He was also on Lost and Fringe. I feel like a lot of people definitely remember him for Fringe, and a lot of people also remember him on Lost, even though he only had, like, a handful of episodes.
Yeah.
It's, he's just, like I said, recognizable face, recognizable voice. He's just got that look that you just remember. It just sticks with you.
Yeah.
And speaking of music, in 2007, he put out an album called Contemplations and Remembrances. I didn't have time to listen to it at all, but I thought that was pretty cool. I was wondering if, you know, because looking at a lot of his roles, at least the ones that I am more familiar with aren't necessarily musical. Like, they're not related to music. So I kind of wondered if at any point he had wanted to do something like that, or if there is a smaller role where, like, music was involved. But I really like that he put out an album.
Yeah.
And then in 2014, I think one of his more recent iconic roles, of course, is as Charon in John Wick. And he also lent his voice to Commander Zavala in Destiny, as well as a sequel. And I've played Destiny, so I, you know, it's been a little while since I played it, but Commander Zavala is, like, deep voice, very commanding presence. Like, I think he is truly the perfect person to voice that. And when Lance died, the players went to visit him, because you can go to this, like, basically like a tower where all of them kind of are like the headquarters.
Sure.
And you go up to them and different people give you different things and you can trade different things. But they went up to Commander Zavala to visit him. They stood vigil. They saluted him in the game. When I read this, I started getting teary-eyed, and I'm a little teary-eyed right now, because I just, like, I think as an artist, that's what you want, is like to know that what you do impacts people and that they will remember you and that you affected their life even in some small way.
Yeah.
Like, most people probably won't really think about who's voicing this video game character, but especially something like Destiny, which is an open world game that kind of, like, it's been around for a very long time, obviously, and it's one of those games that you just keep going back to. And it's not something that you play through, finish, and you're done with it. Like, this is an ongoing thing. And so I think people have gotten used to his voice over the years, have found out who he is, probably figured out, oh, this is the same guy who was in The Wire or something like that,
yeah,
or John Wick. And it's a really big deal to them. And it does make me a little emotional.
Yeah. Now, when I heard that, like, they had gone in to play and, like, done, I had heard some of this, and it is very touching. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of sweet that in that way, like, because Destiny is a game that you can keep returning to and continue to play and all of that, like, it's kind of like he's never gone, because he'll,
yes,
be there.
Yeah.
You know, like, his character, his voice will be there, mm-hmm, playing this, you know, in this game for a long, you know, forever, for a long time. So that's kind of a cool thought, like...
Yeah, and that's true about any of his roles, and about him as Zeus, too.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
We're always going to have that little snippet of his life there, and I think that's really important.
Yeah.
He also voiced a character in Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a game I have not played but have definitely heard of, and its sequel, as well as appeared in Godzilla vs. Kong, the Resident Evil series on Netflix, which was canceled after one season.
Surprise.
I actually really want to, I want to do a whole Resident Evil rewatch, or not rewatch, because I've never seen them, but watch them. And this was also on there. I heard it wasn't great, but I was also very interested in the story, but now I gotta watch it, because Lance is in it.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. I just wanted to give some highlights from his career. I think those are some of the biggest projects. So if you're interested in, like, oh, I've never watched anything he's in, those are some great things to check out. I also, this is one of my favorite things to do, especially for actors who have had long careers, is go back and look at, like, the forgotten roles, or the roles that were, like, so small that maybe they were uncredited in the beginning, or people didn't know who they were, like, their first role. He was just the stagehand on The Nanny in one episode in 1997. So that was, like, not long after he got his master's.
Yeah.
I think that was one of his first roles. He was DC police officer on The West Wing. Of course, if you're Kristen, you have not forgotten this role.
Nope.
But, you know, he's not named. Like, he's
right,
just DC police officer.
Yep. And he really is only in one scene.
Yeah.
But it's like... It's an impact.
Yeah.
And I don't even really like that episode. But I like it because of him. Like,
yeah,
the parts that I like are because of him.
And that was just one episode in 1999. He was assistant Emmy Taylor on Law & Order SVU for 6 episodes over the course of 2000 to 2001. All of these Law & Order ones I like putting in here, too, because you think, like, oh, this actor has, you know, been in huge budget movies, played across from... Keanu Reeves, and you can look back and, of course, he was on Law & Order.
Oh, I
know. You
know,
like, they're all on Law & Order.
I was gonna say, it's hilarious that anybody who's in their mid-20s to, like, 50s has been in an episode of Law & Order. Like, almost all of them. It's kind of hilarious. Like,
yeah.
I remember when Legacies was casting people, and, like, Kaylee Bryant, one of the actresses, she was, like... you know, barely 20 or 21, and she had done an episode of
Law
& Order. And an episode of Criminal Minds. And, you know, and it's just so funny. So, yeah, I love adding people's Law & Order stints,
yeah,
onto these things, because, yeah, it's, everyone has one, and it's fantastic.
If you think about it, it's just statistics. There are so many episodes of,
oh,
that show.
Yeah.
How many, like random people, random kids, random victims do you need on a show like that? You're gonna have somebody who goes on to be somebody bigger.
Yep, they need victims, they need family for every episode, and it changes every episode, and there's so many of them.
Exactly.
Not just episodes, but also shows, because there's like four different Law and Orders, plus all, you know, they're everywhere.
Yeah, plus CSI, and like all, there's so many of them. And, you know, speaking of that, he actually played three separate characters on Law and Order, like not SVU, just regular Law and Order, over the course of 2000 to 2003. So he's in three separate episodes as three different people, which is cool.
That's better.
He was also the police officer in Jay-Z and Beyonce's 03 Bonnie and Clyde, which came out in 2002. And I totally rewatched that music video and saw him in there. And he's, I feel like it's that same sort of, probably very close to his role on The Wire, which would be about this time anyway when that show started.
Yeah.
That just like very stern looking police officer who's like no nonsense, but it was, that was a throwback. That was definitely a throwback.
Oh yeah.
On Law & Order Criminal Intent, he was Jack Bernard for one episode. And on Numbers, which is one of my favorite shows, he was Lieutenant Steve Davidson for one episode. And then on CSI Miami, he was FBI Agent David Park for three episodes in 2005 to 2006. So,
yeah, when I saw he was on Numbers, I was like, Karen's gonna get
yep.
She loves Numbers!
Yeah. So, you know, man put in some work early on with all of these
and he plays
shows.
We'll get into this when we kind of, as we keep going here too, but he plays a lot of military or law enforcement characters. He just has that gravitas and that presence where you don't have to really establish him more than putting him in the uniform, and he just kind of commands.
He's so severe looking, and I think that's why in his bio he had put, I smile sometimes, because I think like people are so used to him being very severe and stern.
Yeah.
Also, while I was going through all of these roles and stuff, I was gonna do more, but I unfortunately ran out of some time, but one of the fun facts that I put down was that he voiced both Ra's al Ghul and Thomas Wayne in two separate Batman properties. And I was like, aw, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I feel like the Ra's al Ghul one, I could definitely hear him doing that. Thomas Wayne, I feel like he would also be very comforting when he wanted to be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He had that really good voice.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see it.
So let's talk a little bit about the roles of Lance's that we were already familiar with. And I'm going to open the floor up to you.
Okay, well, I have to talk about the DC police officer in The West Wing. Because for some reason, like, I've seen him in other things, and it wasn't until I started seeing him in other things that, like, I remembered that he was in an episode of West Wing. So I always had, you know, I went back and found it. And now every time I get near that episode, like in rewatches, because it's one of those shows I turn on all the time.
I was wondering, if you went to go back to rewatch that show, did you keep watching? Did you just let it play?
No, because okay. I have very recently finished a West Wing rewatch.
Oh, okay.
Like, maybe within the last year.
That I've walked out into the living room and Kristen's rewatching The West Wing. It's
just
a lot.
It's just amazing.
It is a very good show.
But yeah, I go back to it all the time, and it's not because, like, he's playing some crazy different kind of character or anything. He's just a police officer in a trench coat. Like, he's more of a detective, and he's there in the park. And Toby shows up because there was a homeless guy who died and had his business card in his pocket. And they were trying to figure out Toby's link to this guy. So it was like a very brief scene, not, you know, a huge plot device or anything crazy like that. But it's just a thing. And he just gives such good, like, cop vibe in that. Like, in that moment, it's such a specific scene, and it's setting kind of the stage for this story to go on the rest of the episode. And so I always kind of go back there, like, when I think about Lance, I'm like, oh, I have to watch that episode of West Wing. But in addition to that, there are two universes of movies that kind of came out at the same time. It was Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down. I think everybody remembers the Let's Blow Up the White House year, where they both came out in the same year, and it was, like, totally random that they happened to come out so close to each other. He was in both. Well, not, he wasn't in
really?
Olympus Has Fallen. He's in Angel Has Fallen, 5, 10 years later when they made the third one.
Okay.
So he's kind of in both
so
universes.
So he jumped franchises.
Yeah, because White House Down came out with Olympus Has Fallen. I forget exactly what year. But I rewatched White House Down this past week, too, and it's funnier than Olympus Has Fallen. Like, it's Channing Tatum being Channing Tatum, and then
yeah.
you've got Jamie Foxx playing the president, and he's just kind of, like, being ridiculous,
yeah.
too. So it's a little funnier, but his role is, again, he's like a military guy. He's like the head of the Joint Chiefs. Like, he's the vice head of the Joint Chiefs. So, like, he takes charge that day because his boss is killed and, you know. So he's kind of in charge of the military aspect of what they're working with and all of that. But yeah, he's in a good amount of that movie. Not necessarily a main character, but not a main character. He spends more time in that movie than I remembered. And this was only the second time I'd ever seen it. So I was like, it'll be fun. Like, we'll give it a rewatch. But he's really great in that. Like, really great. And he, again, gives a little bit of that Zeus energy where he's just very commanding. And he's standing there with all the regalia, like all the I forget what they call them. Bars? They're bars? I think they're bars. All of the insignias on, like, military uniforms, especially when you're looking at, like, a chief, where they've got, like, all these special colored bars and things that have all sorts of meaning that I don't understand. But yeah, he just is so great in White House Down. Not a huge role, but pretty influential. In Angel Has Fallen, he plays David Gentry, who is the head of the Secret Service.
Okay.
So, like, it's very similar.
Right.
But, yeah, he's great in that, too. It's a little smaller of a role.
Those movies are with Gerard Butler.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure I've seen the first one in that series.
With Aaron Eckhart.
Right.
President in the first one and the second one. And then after that, Morgan Freeman takes over as president, and he still kind of works in the Secret Service. So, like, for Angel Has Fallen, it's But anyway, it's one of my favorite action series, especially, like, original action series.
Right.
It's not an adaptation. It's not a reinvention of some old franchise or anything like that. I love those movies. I've watched them way more times than I'd like to
admit. That's so funny because I've only ever seen the first one, and those are definitely right up my alley.
Oh,
so I don't know how you got so into them, and I haven't.
And London Has Fallen is interesting, just seeing all of the things that get destroyed in that movie. It's like, what? And then, again, in Angel Has Fallen, it kind of turns the whole idea of this series kind of on its ear, but it works. So, I'm a huge fan of those movies, so I loved seeing him in the third one.
And, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then my last one is Hotel Manager Karen in John Wick. I hadn't seen John Wick until about 5 months ago.
You know what? Same. It's funny, because I think we watched them separately. Well, we did. I don't know why. I think we did. No, we definitely did. But we ended up kind of getting both into them around the same time. Yeah. Did you see the fourth one?
I did not.
Oh, neither did I.
I thought there was a chance I was going to be able to see it this weekend, but some life stuff got in the way, and I didn't end up making it. But I am going to see it sometime in the near-ish future. I think we're planning to try this week sometime.
Oh, cool.
I am definitely looking forward to seeing his final Charon role. The final John Wick
movie.
Well,
maybe
not. Yeah.
I'll get to that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I was really hoping to see it as well. John Wick is not, like, my favorite action movie series, but they're good, and I love Keanu Reeves,
same.
So, like, I'll watch them anyway.
Same.
He has, like, a small role in that. Like, it's not huge, but you remember him, and he's important enough to kind of be a part of the action, so I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, where I know Lance Reddick from is, like I said, Commander Zavala in Destiny. That was a pretty big one for me. And I've played that game, not a bunch, but enough to, like, be able to hear his voice and stuff like that. John Wick was another one. Unfortunately, as Reggie on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I say unfortunately because that show is for a certain type of person. And I'm not sure I'm that type of person. I have watched all, like, what, 14 seasons? There's not that many. Is there 7?
I don't know. 8, 9?
There's a bunch of seasons. However many there are, I've watched every single episode. And I went back to watch this one. It's called Frank's Brother, and it's an episode that takes place in the, like, 60s and 70s. And, oh, it's so bad. They put a terrible wig on Danny DeVito, and he's supposed to be 19, and he's like a 6-year-old man. That show is so ridiculous. And Lance Reddick plays Reggie, the kind of temperamental owner of this bar, and he's great. Honestly, like, he brings that same sort of presence to the role where he's commanding, he's a little scary and everything, but I would not recommend watching Always Sunny for some Lance Reddick time.
For your Lance Reddick fix.
Yes.
But it exists.
It exists.
And it's a role he performed.
Yes. Yeah. I also watched 3 seasons of Fringe. That's not a show that I ever finished, but I remember really liking it. That's the thing. And, of course, What's-Her-Face is on, well, in a couple episodes of The Last of Us now. I immediately recognized her. I was like, what do I know her from? And she's from Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
But he played Philip Broyles on Fringe, and again, very commanding. Has that voice. I feel like it's just, you know. But the cool thing about him is I feel like he does make those roles very unique, and you can tell the difference between. It's not like he's playing the same character every time, even right. if they have a similar presence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's jump into some new roles that we watched. We each watched a movie.
If you loosely define the word movie.
Oh, good. You had as much success as
mine
I did.
Mine was interesting, I guess.
So, this is really funny because I ended up watching Monster Party and Kristen ended up watching The Guest. And I was texting one of my friends about Monster Party. I'll get to that in a second. And he was like, I've never seen that one, but I liked him in The Guest. And he said he thought that The Guest was pretty good. And I was like, okay, but then now Kristen's reaction has me questioning him.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Well, why don't you kick it off? Let's talk about The Guest.
Sure.
Because after that, I was like, okay, maybe I'll watch The Guest to, like, give it a chance since I wasn't a huge fan of Monster Party.
I will say I'm maybe being a little harder on The Guest than some people would be. It's fine. I will say, when I turned it on, it's listed on IMDb as an action mystery thriller movie. And I was like, okay, I love a good thriller. Yeah. Not a horror fan, but I like a good thriller. Like, that's awesome. Sounds good. Right up my alley. The opening of this movie gave straight up horror movie vibes. Like, the whole premise is, like, there's this guest who shows up at these people's house. He is telling them that he's a friend of their son who died in war. Like, he was a soldier friend of their son. And they invite him in, and they, like, talk to him, and he tells them stories and whatever. And then, like, people start dying in the town. And, like, is it related to this guy or is it not or whatever? And so it's a big mystery from there, you know, kind of going on from there. It's not really a big mystery. It's kind of, I probably shouldn't have said that. It's just a thing that's happening. Anyway. Okay. So yeah, I was really kind of questioning myself, especially because I watched this kind of late at night and I was like, this is a terrible decision.
No.
But it ended up not really being as scary as I thought. They just really opened it up with some lingering camera angles that could have been used in horror movies. This movie actually stars Dan Stevens. He plays the guest. Like, he plays this soldier who's entering their home. Most people would probably know him. He played the Beast in the live-action Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
He was also Matthew Crowley on Downton Abbey. And he plays a very different character in this movie. I will say, Dan is one of those actors, I feel like, who's very chameleon-y. Because
I agree.
He never looks quite the same to me in things he does. And in this, he was real creepy. So,
Yeah, I actually know him from Legion. Yes. I saw him in Legion before I saw him in A Beauty and the Beast, and I was like, that's the same person. Also, he can sing. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that boy can sing.
And he plays, like, a really good-hearted, wholesome person on Downton Abbey. Mm. Like, they're not all wholesome people on Downton Abbey. But Matthew Crawley is, like, a good guy. So it's so weird to see him play this, like, kind of creepy individual.
Right, yeah.
But he's great in this. It also, I say stars, but Micah Monroe, who was someone I knew I recognized, but I couldn't quite place it. She's Bill Pullman's daughter in Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh.
Like, the adult.
Right, okay.
Blonde. She's kind of the other main character in The Guest. She was also in It Follows and The Fifth Wave, neither of which I had seen, but I
have seen It Follows.
Yeah, but they're kind of, like, bigger movies, so she's been in those two.
Yeah.
And then, randomly, toward the end, there's a soldier who takes a phone call, and it was Candace Patton from The Flash.
Oh!
And so I had to throw her name in there, because I was like, oh my god, it's her! And, like, it was one of those, like, little teeny roles that you take when you're up and coming, and you're just trying to get a paycheck. And I thought that was cute, so I had to include her in that list, too. Yeah, I took some really random notes.
I see that.
The main character goes to a bar, and he orders something called he calls it a fireball. It's a specific drink made from cinnamon schnapps and Tabasco.
Yeah, that's gonna be a no for me.
And he tells the kid he drinks it, and I'm like, why would anyone ever drink that? But he ends up using it more like a drink to throw in someone's eyes.
Oh.
To kind of stun them. So it works more like pepper spray than a drink.
Yeah.
If you're looking to order a drink that's going to burn, fireball. I learned something. Sure, why not? So I thought that was worth mentioning. But really, I was watching this for Lance. It took 45 minutes for him to even get a scene. Mm. The movie is only an hour and 40 minutes long, really.
Okay.
So, yeah, it took 45 minutes to see his first scene, which was kind of him. Again, he's playing a military, I forget exactly his character's role. But, like, he's a military guy. He's the head of, like, a military experiment project that's top secret. You know, all of that. So he is kind of in a meeting. You see him in the first scene, and then he disappears again when we go back to watch Dan Stevens' character, like, doing all the things he's doing. So then we don't see Lance again for another half an hour, and then he's in there for probably the next 15 minutes. So he's not in this movie as much as I hoped.
Yeah.
But he's great when he's in it. He does save some people from getting killed, so, you know, go Lance. It's a very odd movie. Like, you're expecting, you know the premise of this movie, so you know that Dan Stevens' character isn't really up to any good, and he's definitely not. He comes across as, like, too good to be true, and he definitely is, and then he becomes a psycho, and you're, like, not surprised. By the way you were acting earlier in this movie, I'm not completely surprised that you're a psycho. But it was passably interesting. It's kind of bloody in the second half of the movie. It gets real bloody. But, like, not a terrible movie, not a great movie, just a movie.
Yeah.
I was kind of sad that it didn't have more Lance, and that he didn't get to do something a little more inventive or different, but he was solid. Solid performance from him, so no issue there. I had actually heard about this movie from someone else, so I was a little shocked that it was, let's just say, Dan's character is kind of a military experiment, kind of gone wrong kind of thing, but, like, they didn't actually ever tell you what the real experiment was. They just kind of leave it at, well, he was a part of this program, and we did this and this and this, but you don't actually get a good picture of the whole thing. So I think that was my biggest complaint, is, like, if they would have actually told us what was going on, I would have been more drawn into the story.
Right, yeah. I mean, okay, that's gonna go a little lower on my list now, I think. maybe someday. I do like Dan Stevens a lot. I think he's a very good actor.
And he's honestly pretty good in this. He has some range, and it works in his favor.
Yeah, that's awesome. Monster Party. I would not recommend you watch Monster Party. it is definitely a horror movie. It's more in the vein of a slasher than anything else, but there is a lot of body horror in this movie. Very shocking and disturbing at times. I wanted to watch this because the premise sounded really cool. It's basically about this group of teenagers who decide to rob this, like, really fancy house, and they don't know that the people inside the house are all recovering serial killers. And it was billed as a dark comedy. I wouldn't call it a comedy, really. Like, there were a couple of moments that was like, okay, yes, this is kind of what I was hoping to get out of this, but 90% of the movie was not anything like a comedy. And the body horror, while I definitely don't mind that, was a lot. And if you're like very iffy about it, don't watch this movie. There were some moments that I really just like gasped out loud. It was kind of intense. But there's, you know, a whole cast of characters in this movie. Some of the ones that really jumped out to me was Erin Moriarty from The Boys. She was fantastic in this movie. Probably the most interesting character to me. And then Julian McMahon from Charmed. Gotta give a little Charmed shout out to Cole. He had very terrible facial hair, so that's unfortunate. Because he's an attractive man. I did not like his facial hair in this movie. And then Kean Lawley from Zach and Mia, which I haven't seen.
I haven't either.
He was dynamic in this movie. And like, he plays a straight up psychopath, but you're like, but he's cute, though. And I hate that.
Another one of those.
Yes, exactly. But it looks like his role in Zach and Mia, at least, is, you know, more like book boyfriend than, like, you know, psychopath. So, but yeah, Erin and Kean were definitely, I think, the best ones in the movie. And they're, like, secondary characters. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lance's role, again, kind of a theme here, was much smaller than I expected. But he is very powerful. He's kind of the one who is in control of this group of serial killers. He's the one that says, we're not going to kill anymore. You know, we're recovering. Stick to your regimens so that you don't kill anybody and break your sobriety, which is what they call it in the movie. And yeah, I mean, he's very powerful. He commands the room. He looks great in a suit. He's wearing this, like, tan suit. And I was just like, Zeus vibes. Like, I can really get behind this.
I think that's one of the things I always take from him as Karen in John Wick. Like, that man can wear a suit.
Yes.
Like, not just a military uniform, just a cop uniform or whatever. He can wear a suit. And I think that it's one of those things for Zeus, because Zeus is a suit guy in the Percy Jackson universe. Like, they had to have a guy who could just, like, wear the heck out of a suit.
Yeah.
And you don't get any better than Lance.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's really true.
Yeah.
And in this movie in particular, he does a great job of swinging from, like, very controlled to very psychotic. And I kind of feel like that could lend itself to Zeus, because Zeus is, he's not, he doesn't quite go that far as this movie does, but he's temperamental. I think that's a thing about the gods in general, is that they're temperamental. And I think that Zeus, Lance as Zeus, could come off as very controlled and then become very angry in a very big way. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I think the concept of Monster Party was actually really awesome. Like I said, that's why I wanted to watch the movie. The execution, not so much. And I was like, how old is this movie? Is it time for a remake yet? It was made in like 2018. So it's not quite time for a remake. But if they did it, and if somebody else took it on, took on the concept and stuff, I would probably rewatch it, because I think that it's really cool. I just wish it had been done kind of differently.
I remember when we were both looking through his filmography, like trying to kind of decide on a movie or two we could watch for this episode. When you picked this one, I was kind of like, I hope she likes that, because it sounded really cool. Like, it sounded really interesting. I mean, I like a good serial killer documentary as much as the next person. I like, you know, movies with serial killer, you know, antagonists or whatever. So I had no issue. Like, the whole idea of it sounded really cool. And if it's, like, a comedy, then it's insane, you know, watchable. And
yeah.
I mean, I love Game Night, which is kind of, like, horror comedy. And, you know, that sort of thing. So I was kind of hoping it would be more in that vein. Mm-hmm. I'm a little sad to know that it's more of the opposite side of the horror comedy thing. It's more horror, less comedy. But, yeah, like, this is one of those where you're, like, okay, it's a good concept, but it wasn't brought to its fullest potential. And if someone sees the concept and says, I can write a movie like that, it wouldn't necessarily even have to be a remake or something. But if someone took the idea of this and said, I'm going to write my own story and it's going to be, it's going to use some of this framing or framework,
yeah, this is like an inspiration for what I want to do. Yeah,
so I would definitely be down if somebody wanted to kind of play around with this concept. Yeah,
I think the theme here, though, is that Lance is good in his roles. Like, regardless of what the movie is like, Lance does a really good job. I think he goes in knowing what he wants to do with the character, and he executes it very well. And, yeah, I mean, he was obviously super talented.
And it's a credit to him with just how many things he was a part. If you think about, like, his first real role was in 97, and he, you know, passed away in 2023. That's what, about 26 years total? Yeah. And he has a lot of credits. A lot of them are smaller roles and things, but he's a lot of credits to his name. And I think that goes to just kind of speak of the person he was, because when he passed, my Twitter timeline was full of people, of actors who I recognized their names and, you know, people who I knew who were saying, like, he was so much fun to work with. Like, he was such a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know, the world is, you know, gonna hurt. This one hurts, you know. Like, and it's just, I feel like there so many people got to work with him because he did so many of these smaller projects or things where he took a smaller role in a big project that lots of people got to know him, and he was truly a testament to his profession.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, same with my timeline. It was just, and it still, I still see stuff coming up where people are talking about it, people sharing videos and stuff, and like, it's hard because it does make me very sad. Even though, you know, he wasn't one of my favorite actors of all time or anything. But again, like, he's just been around for a while. And it still just makes me sad that he's gone before his time. And, you know, we're not gonna get any more of him. However, we kind of are. Because he actually has 7 unreleased roles.
Wow.
On his IMDb right now.
I mean, that's the film industry for you, though. You film something and then it doesn't come out for 6 years or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
true. There are 2 films that are unreleased. I believe that this is a film. It's White Men Can't Jump.
I remember talk of them doing a reboot.
Yes, they're doing a reboot of that. And it stars Cinqua Walls from Teen Wolf, who played Boyd. That's instantly, because White Men Can't Jump is one of my favorite movies, and I was like, I don't know about this, and then I saw Cinqua was in it, and I was like, I feel kind of okay about this, so I'm probably going to watch it. Jack Harlow is also in it, and the trailer honestly looked pretty funny, like, it looked good.
I feel like that's one that it's actually been long enough that a reboot doesn't feel grotesque.
And they can modernize it to a way that would work really well right now.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Yeah.
That comes out May 19th, so that's pretty soon, and he will be playing Benji Allen. Saint Sebastian is also completed. It he'll be playing Ives, and all the IMDb description says is survivors in post-apocalyptic Russia after nuclear war. So sounds like something I can be into, though.
Yeah.
There's 2 movies that are also in post-production. One of them is called Shirley, and it doesn't name his role at all, so I'm not really sure who he's playing. But this movie is a biopic about Shirley Chisholm, America's first black congresswoman. So that could end up being pretty interesting. You
know? I mean, if I would imagine that if she's the first black congresswoman, there's probably a black congressman, would be my guess.
Potentially, yeah.
With the way, I'm a terrible history buff. I don't know enough. I am not skilled in that realm, so I don't actually know. But my guess is that there may be a congressman that maybe he plays or something
or
like
husband,
that.
Or husband, right. Or, you know, maybe another military person or somebody like within that. Like, there's a lot of options, yeah.
But yeah, that could be a really cool role.
Yeah. And then the other one that is currently in post-production is Ballerina, and he will be playing Charon because this is the Ana de Armas John Wick spinoff film.
You know, I just heard about this, but I did not even think about him possibly being in it. So that's kind of
cool. Must have already, I mean, obviously if it's in post-production, he did already film his roles. So at least we get to see him one more time as Charon. So
yeah, that's cool.
Pretty cool. Currently in production is the Kane Mutiny Court Martial. As Captain Luther Blakely, this follows a naval officer who stands trial for mutiny after taking command from a ship captain he feels is acting in an unsuitable way, putting in danger both the ship and its crew. I don't know for sure if Lance is playing the captain, but considering his role is Captain Luther Blakely, it seems like maybe he could be the one who's... unstable. And this movie stars Kiefer Sutherland, and plus Jay Duplass is in there, who will be playing Hades in the Percy Jackson show.
That's cool.
So that's really awesome. And then, so since this is currently in production, I don't know what's going to happen with that role, if he already finished filming or what. And then pre-production is Apteros, as Captain Mitchell, a crew of 7 astronauts en route to Mars after bacterial life is discovered on the red planet in the not-too-distant future. Soon, however, a number of unusual events unfold aboard the spacecraft, which is named Apteros, and the crew find themselves divided in a tense psychological battle as they struggle to work out what is happening and realize nothing is as it seems. It sounds like one of those typical, like, sci-fi movies, but, like, I'm not against seeing
I think it sounds interesting, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and this also stars Kaia Scodelario, who's from the Maze Runner movies and other things. She's been in other bigger things, but, like, I know her from the Maze Runner movies.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So then, if this is in pre-production, I would imagine that they might recast the role.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Depends on what his role was. Like, I mean, who knows? Maybe he was just doing, like, voiceover for the ship or something like that. Like, he could do anything on a movie like
that. It says Captain Mitchell, but know for sure, like, what kind of role that could be.
Yeah. So there's a possibility that he'll get recast in that, which makes sense.
Right, but. Yeah. So I want to wrap this up by talking about, of course, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, his role as Zeus. Out of, you know, everything that we've gone through, what we've seen, the old stuff, the new stuff, what do you think, and I feel like we kind of already talked about this, but what do you think his portrayal will be like as Zeus?
I think what I'm most excited to see is how we kind of think of Zeus. And you think of, like, Disney's Hercules, where he's this jolly, happy, very, you know, John Goodman-esque kind of guy. Like, it's almost like Santa-like.
I was gonna say, is he Santa Claus?
Like, he kind of feels kind of Santa-y, you know. But, like, when you think about the Percy Jackson Zeus, he's a lot more mercurial, which is kind of funny. But, like, he doesn't have that same good-natured, jolly Zeus, which is more accurate to Greek mythology.
For sure.
Because Zeus is not always just, like, a great guy. He's problematic, he's a pain, he's short-tempered, you know. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Lance's portrayal and see how he can kind of bring all of those little aspects of Zeus together that makes it Percy Jackson's Zeus, not any other incarnation of Zeus that we've had before. And we've talked about how Lance does, like, commanding and powerful, and he's played all these characters that command a room and that demand respect. And I want to see how Zeus, you know, how that comes across when he's in a pinstripe suit and he's standing next to Toby Stevens as Poseidon in a beach chair and, you know, wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Like, I want to feel the difference in power and, like, how different he is from so many of the other Olympian gods. So I think that's the thing I'm most excited to see, is how he embodies everything that is Zeus in the Percy Jackson world.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I'm really looking forward to him being stern and a little scary when we first meet him. I'm also interested, like you said, in seeing how he reacts to the other gods and, like, his relationships with them. But also that, like, just that temperamental nature that Zeus has, I really feel like after watching Monster Party, I can see how much Lance could do with that. And everything Rick had talked about, his performance being very musical and just like saying things in a certain way and performing this role in a certain way, is so interesting to me. And it's not going to be a huge role. He's not in every episode of the show, but I think he's going to make his mark, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
There's also a clip going around that I will link to where Lance was being interviewed for John Wick 4, and he talks about his portrayal of Zeus, and he says he didn't know about the books when he got the role, but he was blown away by how huge Percy Jackson was, which was really exciting to hear. And when talking about Zeus, he says he's so beautifully theatrical, and I was like, yes, yeah, that is our Zeus. And I think Lance Reddick in particular will be able to bring that alive in a way that, like, not everybody can. Make him theatrical and scary at the same time.
Right.
That's not always easy to do.
No.
And he also said he brushed up on his Greek mythology for the role, and he feels lucky and honored and excited to play him in this franchise, he called it, which I think, you know, gives hope that there could be more seasons coming or whatever. And again, it's just, it is very sad that we lost him before he could play Zeus in all 5 seasons. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But I'm excited that we got him for this little bit.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's really a shame that we won't get to see him bring Zeus alive in all of his glory. Because as we know, the later seasons, we kind of get other moments with Zeus where we kind of get to see him. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice to see what the show came up with, too, because when you have somebody like Lance playing this character, maybe you work some more Zeus into an episode or something, too. So it is a really big shame that we're not going to get to see all of that extra beautiful possibility. But, I mean, I'm really excited to see what he does with the limited amount of Zeus we get in the first season. We know it's kind of that last episode, maybe 2, and, like, that's probably all we're gonna get.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see how he starts it, because somebody is going to have to take the mantle in the future.
Right.
Like, we're going to get a second season. They're already writing it, maybe. Yes. And, like, you know, there's going to be a second season. There's probably, you know, going to be a third and a fourth and a fifth. And in order for that to happen, they're going to have to recast or figure some way to have Zeus in the show. And he is going to set the stage for what Zeus is in this world. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, even if he can't play it, I'm glad he got to give us the first incarnation of Zeus in this Disney Plus series that whoever takes the mantle up after him will have to measure up to. Like, I feel like that's a positive way to kind of think about him not being able to be there, is like, he still sets the bar here.
Yeah.
And so the next person's really going to have to meet it, and it's going to be a high bar.
I think that's a fantastic point, because I've been thinking a lot about, like, okay, they're obviously going to have to recast him. That's just kind of inevitable at this point. With this world and with that character, that's actually not that big of a deal, because we know the gods can change how they look, you know, in whatever way they want. They can appear in many different ways and different forms. And so for another actor to step into those shoes is not that big of a deal, because Zeus can do that. It's canon, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Lance gets to tell the world how Zeus will be played in the show. He gets to show everybody, this is Zeus in the Percy Jackson world for Disney Plus. And whoever comes in behind him is going to have to make sure that they have that same energy.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they look different, you know,
right,
it's going to be the same energy. And I think that's really huge that he kind of gets to be the one to set sail on this character. And even though somebody else will pick up where he left off, like, he's the one, he was the first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really huge. And so I think that does make me feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, like, every actor's going to take a role and do their own thing with it. Like, that's why acting is cool. But, like, yeah, he gets to set the bar and is going to set it high. We, you know, we've already seen Rick's reaction to what he brought us as Zeus. And we know that he's really excited to see what we get to see from Lance. So yeah, I think that's, at least we know that he got to do this role and he had fun with it, because it really sounded like he enjoyed it and was enjoying looking forward to playing it. So at least we get to see him in the role for first season, and then from there we'll see who can try and step into those shoes.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. Kristen and I always have a ton of fun talking about movies, so it's nice to be able to do that on here. And I feel really good about just being able to talk about him for a little bit and kind of shine a light on his career and everything. But if you have any thoughts, if you have any favorite roles, please share them with us. We'll be really interested in hearing about them.
Yeah.
But now it's time to move on to The Kane Chronicles.
Yeah. Okay. So we are talking about The Kane Chronicles, The Red Pyramid, Chapter 3, entitled Imprisoned with My Cat. And I just have to say, it's in Sadie's voice.
Yes.
Which is super fun. Yeah. And I was really excited about that. As soon as I read, like, I think at the beginning it says something like, Carter, give that to me. Or something like that. So, like, you're like, oh, okay, all right. So it's not just Carter's POV. Like, this is interesting.
And I think Sadie's voice is, like, so distinct. It's very different from Carter's and the way she speaks, because she is from England. And all of that. And she's got, like, a faster pace to her voice. Like, she's less measured than him, which totally makes sense. But I really, really loved hearing this chapter in her voice.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's the recap. Sadie basically recaps everything we saw in Chapter 2 very quickly, very briefly. And then she goes on to say that she and Carter were separated by the police. She was locked in the curator's office with the same chain they used against the curator, which is just rude. She goes on to detail an icy knife-like chill on the back of her neck that just felt so significant, I couldn't leave it out. The cops then took Sadie home, locked her in her room while they talked to her grandparents and got them up to speed. She, at one point, gets a glimpse of the living room and sees Carter sitting there with her grandparents and the cops talking, which then the door is closed and she's stuck in her room again. She digs up a picture from under a whole stack of other ones, of her mother wearing a t-shirt with the Ankh symbol, which means life. She tells us it means life. She ponders what Per Ankh, a phrase she heard in the kerfuffle between her dad and the fiery man, might mean. And if she would know the meaning if she wrote the symbols herself, based on how she understood what her dad was writing on the tablet on the Rosetta Stone at the museum. Just as she's about to put her pen to paper and try to write out the symbol, the police inspector chief guy walks into her room and they have, well, not a peaceful or cooperative chat, but they have a chat. Sadie keeps telling him the truth, telling him everything that happened. She's not holding back. And the officer just believes she's lying, she's using her imagination, she's trying to cover for her dad, yada yada. They bicker back and forth for a bit before he decides Sadie isn't going to budge, and he takes her downstairs to talk about consequences with her grandparents. And I couldn't help but roll my eyes at stupid humans. That's all. Okay, so starting back at the beginning here, Sadie is locked in the curator's office, separate from Carter. It just felt kind of funny how incensed she was that they locked her in the office with the stupid chain that I used on the other guy, and I was so happy to lock him up, and now here I am. And I also wanted to note that this definitely feels and, like, reeks of police tactics. Like, when they have a group of people who commit a crime together, they'll separate them and they'll talk to them individually to try and see if their stories match up. And I definitely feel like that's kind of what's going on here. I'm a little shocked that they just assume that these children are troublemakers. Like, I know they have an idea that their father was the one causing trouble, like the one that blew up the building. But, like, it just, I was kind of taken aback that they treated them like criminals, basically, rather than treating them just like kids who were with their father and this happened. So, I don't know. I guess there was reason to have some suspicion, but at the same time, like, they're pretty young, so.
I think keeping them separate makes sense. Locking her in that curator's office, to me, was a little much.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, too, yeah. Like, it just feels a little extreme. The icy chill on the back of her neck, so strong, like, so bad that it almost feels like knives. It feels significant.
It's probably important. I have no idea what's going on.
I had to throw it in here because she takes a moment to really describe it. And I was like, all right, this is probably going to come back at some point. But we know it's kind of the opposite of the necklace because she does talk about, and I think I get to it later in the chapter, how the necklace felt warm when it was protecting her. So it's not like the necklace protecting her and she's just feeling it on her neck. I feel like this has something to do with her other abilities that we've kind of already got a glimpse of with the knowing what the symbols meant last chapter. So the cops take her out of the office, but they don't really do anything. They just shove her in a car and take her home and then lock her in her room and post a guard at the door that won't let her out of her room while they're all talking downstairs. Carter, her grandparents, the cops, they're all in the living room downstairs chatting. And it just seems really extreme to me that they keep, like, I understand separating them, kind of getting the story straight. Like, they have to give separate statements anyway, that's fine. But, like, yeah, it just feels really extreme to, like, post a guard at her bedroom door and all of that.
I'm also just kind of suspicious of this inspector guy because he seems to know a lot already and he seems to know about Amos and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know, the way that he was telling her constantly that she was making things up and stuff, yes, it was like patronizing, but it also felt like, I don't know, suspicious. I don't know how I feel about him.
Karen suspicious? I was less suspicious and just more like, okay, idiotic human who doesn't know anything, get out of the way so that they can figure out what's actually going on and get the story rolling, you know. I felt more like he was just being an idiot, like dumb human doesn't understand, but I can see why you would kind of question, like, some of the ways he dismisses her. It's not like, oh, she's just being crazy. It's like, well, we're not gonna talk about that. Like, let's keep moving forward. Here's what really happened. Blah, blah, blah. She is stewing in her room, and she tells us about her necklace, which we kind of already talked about. It is important to her. It is her biggest connection to her father. She does occasionally take it off and chuck it at the wall when she's pissed, but she puts it back on, and she always wears it whenever she leaves. So it's worth noting that, like, that is very important to her, and it is a connection to her dad. It glowed hot at the museum. She does believe in that protection now that she's kind of seen it in action, which I can understand. She starts pondering the Ankh symbol in general. She digs that picture out of her mom with a t-shirt that has the Ankh symbol, which is very, I feel like everyone knows what this symbol is. You may not know that it's Ankh. It's like the thing that kind of looks like a typical Christian cross, but with a loop at the top.
Right.
And it means life in the Egyptian pantheon of symbols and things. Like, it means life. But she doesn't know what Per Ankh would mean, and she heard that kind of in the conversation between her dad and the fiery man. So she's thinking about it, and she's like, you know, based on how much I understood as my dad was drawing these symbols out, I wonder if I drew the symbol for it, if I would be able to read it and I would know exactly what it means. So she starts to try and do that, and that is the moment the inspector walks in.
Yeah.
And now I'm pondering exactly what would happen if she did draw these symbols, and I feel like it's important, and I feel like it might happen. So I'm looking forward to that. This inspector guy really doesn't believe her, and I loved her line. It wasn't really a line, it's not a quote, but she's basically saying, like, why even bother telling adults the truth when they believe you're lying every time you tell them the truth?
I mean, fair.
It goes, I feel like every fantasy novel, especially like a YA fantasy novel, when your protagonist tells an authority figure the actual truth, and they're always just like, yeah, 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 crazy kids, idiots, whatever, just get out of my way. I love this here because it's so true. It's like, why even bother? You know, I should just tell you what you want to hear because then I'll be able to get back to trying to stop the evildoer from doing whatever evil they were doing. The police guy calls her father a terrorist, which she has a pretty strong reaction to, as you would. And details, like, he basically tells her, like, there's a lot of Egyptians who don't believe their artifacts belong in other countries' museums. And since this is London and the Rosetta Stone is in London, like, her father may have been working with a group of them, and that's why they kind of are investigating this as if he was a terrorist and he blew this up in, like, protest.
Right, yeah. I think this is actually a really interesting conversation and one that's become a lot more mainstream lately as we're talking about repatriation, which is basically a different country, you know, country A has country B's historical items and country B wants them back. And country A is like, no. So basically England versus the world. Not always, but it is.
There are so many good memes. Like,
yeah.
The British Museum, if they gave back every item that didn't belong to them, and it's just like an empty room.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
This is a conversation that I'm really interested in learning more about and everything like that, because like I said, I have a degree in art history. Museums are very important to me. I've learned a lot through museums, but I also believe that a lot of those artifacts should be in their home countries with the people and the cultures, you know, who are going to appreciate them. And we had talked about Cleopatra's Needle in London a couple of weeks ago, and I did end up posting that picture that I had when I visited London on our Instagram. So if you haven't seen that yet, go check it out, because I wrote a little bit about repatriation and about this issue, because there are some who believe that England isn't really taking good care of the needle and they would like it back. Other people think it's important that it was given as a gift to England and so that it stays in England, and it's a way to expose people to that culture when they could never go to Egypt or something like that. So it's a very complicated conversation that needs a lot of nuance. But the fact that Rick wrote about that here,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he does, you know, the inspector, I'm not saying Rick, the inspector calls her father a terrorist and talks about how there are some Egyptians who act in that way in order to get these items back. But this is also like a very real conversation that is definitely still happening today.
Again, and this happened when he wrote this novel, not now where it's become a really big topic of conversation. I think it's important to see, like, how these things, you know, a child who reads this book now will maybe look into that and will see the conversation that's happening around museums and how they handle artifacts and, you know, should Egypt have ownership of those items, they can then lend them to other museums. They can allow museums to put that those things on display. Like, the Toledo Museum of Art has a large collection of Greek and Egyptian art and artifacts and things like that, but, you know, do they own it or is it on lend or any of that? But yeah, I it's definitely a conversation worth having and is being had more and more these days. So just cool that Rick adds that in. It's a nice little conversation starter for
us. And especially if there are parents reading this book to their kids, like, that opens the door to that kind of conversation. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so then he goes on to question whether Carter is even a quote-unquote proper brother to her. And I loved Sadie's response to him. She gets really frustrated and is like, you know, this happens every time I step out with them. It's garbage. Yes, I'm his daughter. Yes, I'm his sister. What about it? You know, and this is that same bit of racism that we encountered in the second chapter, where we saw the curator kind of have that same reaction. And it just, I'm glad that Sadie's reaction is kind of similar to how we felt. Like, we're, you know, it's like, come on, people. Yeah. I mean, I know this book was written slightly before now, where we're kind of, you know, I would say the world in general is kind of opening up to being less judgmental in some ways.
I would say that the world has stayed pretty much the same in terms of this happening. I think now we are more open to talking about
That's probably correct.
Yeah.
That's a better way to say it.
But yeah, this really frustrated me as well. And I liked that we saw it from Carter's point of view and then also from Sadie's point of view, where they're obviously on the same page. They do have this familial bond, even if they aren't super close. But like, it's still her dad. It's still her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to talk about this, because the inspector says, so you're determined to protect him as well, talking about her brother. And I'm like, okay, maybe this could be because Carter stays with his father, so they're obviously closer, so they kind of are assuming that Carter might be involved in this as well. But it also still feels super racist. Yeah. Like, just like, here's this black kid and his black father who, you know, kind of got involved in all of this. Sadie was there too, but she doesn't seem to be in as much trouble as Carter is. And yes, it could be because she's not as close to her father, but also, like, she's also white passing. Mm-hmm. So, like, it feels not great.
No, I agree. 100%. The cop then goes on to tell her that Carter has already told them, quote unquote, the truth, and is basically like, if you stick with your story, then you're going to get consequences, and Carter hasn't. And I had to take a second and say, do we think Carter actually told the inspector, like, the some sort of cover story, maybe, that he and his dad had come up with? Like, if you ever are left on your own and you have to just, you know, answer to my behavior, here's what you tell the cops so that they'll let you off the hook. Like, it's totally possible that Carter and his dad came up with something like that. But at the same time, it's totally possible that the cop is lying to Sadie to try and get her to say something so that he has something to work with that these two said differently. If they're saying the same things, then it lends to that they're both telling the truth, or they're both getting the truth mostly right.
Yeah.
And it's hard to kind of tell here, but I feel like it's more the second.
I definitely do too, and I think Sadie even says something close to that. I think the cover story idea is, like, very plausible, but I think the inspector was just trying to catch her up, and she was like, I'm too smart for you. That's not gonna work.
Yeah. No, I took a whole minute to be like, would they have talked about that? Like, they've gotten into enough scrapes that I feel like maybe they did have that conversation and Carter has a story ready to go that he uses. But he would have to know that Sadie's not going to have that story. So, like, why would he regale the cop with this knowing that Sadie's going to say something different? It just doesn't totally make sense to me. So, yeah. That pretty much wraps up the chapter. After this, the cop tells her they're going downstairs and they're going to find out those consequences. And I'm intrigued to know what happens after that. So we'll get into that when we read the next chapter next week. We do have our favorite quotes and our favorite moments, though. Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine was from Sadie when she was like, can knowledge of boring Egyptian stuff be hereditary? With my luck. Because it was... It was so Sadie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mine was clearly also a Sadie line. And she says, I'm not lying, Inspector. And I think your eyebrow is trying to escape.
That was pretty funny.
It's a good one. It's a good one. And then your favorite moment?
Her being defensive over her brother and father, even though she doesn't see them all that often and they're not, like, super, super close. I just really like that she values the necklace that he gave her and the cat. Because, like, he gave them to her. Like, that was a gift to her. And even though she gets frustrated, she always puts it back on. And it goes to show how much she wants to be a part of this family, even if she grumbles about it a lot.
Yeah. I do, too. I like that bit. My favorite moment was her attitude toward the cop. Like, she's such a smartass, and I love it. Like, Carter is kind of the better... Like, he's the straightforward, doesn't necessarily feel like a troublemaker,
right,
follows the rules kind of kid. Like, I get that vibe from him. Whereas Sadie is, honestly, she gives me Talia energy, where, like, she's gonna do whatever she feels like and whatever feels right to her, and she doesn't really care if you agree with her, so this is how we're handling this situation.
Her and Talia would either be best friends or mortal enemies.
Like, either they agree on everything, or they disagree on everything. Yeah, I can totally see that. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. You can tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy and Angel, and a few more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack, is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradio.
thefootballradiopodcast@gmail.com.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help, and we do see them, I promise. It may take a minute, but we see them. You can leave us questions or comments or ideas for episodes and content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have one bit of feedback this week from Henry, and I'm going to throw it to Karen to let us know what Henry has to say.
Yeah, so Henry called us out a bit because we were like, oh, hopefully we'll get answers in Chapter 3. Spoiler alert, we did not get answers in Chapter 3. And he kind of called us out on that, which was hilarious. I'll link to it because it's better as a visual meme than it is me reading it off. But thank you, Henry. Yes, we were very wrong, and I want answers.
I think we know better than to actually expect answers, but we just hope and pray that the next chapter will answer all of our questions. We know it's Rick. It won't. But thank you, Henry.
It will have to eventually.
Right? Eventually, I'm going to have to know what's happening.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to basically do a catch-up episode. We want to do that quiz that we talked about at the top of the episode, as well as talk about Rick's blog post and some news that has happened and things that will inevitably happen this week. So we're going to just kind of have it be a catch-up episode, as well as discussing the Red Pyramid Chapter 4, so make sure to read that. But other than that...
Well, I was going to say... I want to tell everybody now, so they're very excited, that yes, I did talk to Marcus Shiro about Into the Light. I did sneak some The Sun and the Star questions in there.
Ooh.
There's no exclusives. It's not going to be any spoilers. They were sure not to talk about any of that stuff. But just talking about the process a little bit and like how excited they are about the tour and everything, I'm going to slip that into next week as well, which is another reason why we wanted to do kind of just a random episode. So. Yeah. I'm very, very much planning on trying to talk to either both Mark and Rick or just Mark ahead of The Sun and the Star because they are very excited to talk about The Sun and the Star spoilers and they can't right now. So hoping to get them on closer to that release day so that we can, you guys can just blow through the book and then we can talk about spoilers and it'll be fantastic. Mm-hmm. So
sounds good.
Next week's going to be a cool episode.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.